Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. I am Chris Graham. It's Tuesday. We're going to talk some college softball with Jerry Carter, who was on hand for the Blacksburg Regional, the number two Hokies, battling their way through a home regional and eventually winning after having to go through a couple of elimination games to get to the Super Regional round. And Jerry, not just a thrilling weekend with seven games of softball, but a pretty wet weekend, lots of weather delays, early starts, late starts. Quite a weekend for you down there in Blacksburg.
Chris, I got to tell you, and I even made reference to it. When I went down there to watch the series, I was not going down there in the mindset of a reporter or trying to tell a story. I was just going down there to watch some softball. And so many things happened over the 3 days that by the time it was all said and done, and you're going, wow, this is a story, but the story is borderline unbelievable. You're sitting there and it literally had everything you could possibly want to happen inside of a 72-hour window, including a game that ended at 1:04 a.m. And I that's the one that was kind of sticking out to me when we were leaving the park at 1:04, was when using the comparison you and I did a couple of ACC basketball tournaments together, that the fan that goes down there understands that, say, if you're a Virginia fan, that when you go down there on day one, Virginia's going to play a game. On day two, Virginia's going to play a game. The unique situation that Virginia Tech had was their fans, Chris, across the country, it varies so much park to park. Most schools still do not charge admission for softball games. And so then, and the average size of a softball park in a non-big time school is 1,000 or less. So what Virginia Tech had to do in conjunction with the NCAA was go from a facility that had not charged admission the entire season to creating a gated system. And then because the NCAA is not going to do anything that isn't going to have an admission tag to it. So when you leave the park at 1:04 in the morning, everybody's just thinking, man, let me go home and wake back up. I'm thinking, wow, this grounds crew still has to flip the stadium. The concession stands still have to close up and reopen. I go, the Virginia Tech players at that point had been there 12 or 13 hours. I said, oh, and by the way, they've got to come back in a few hours and win two more ball games. That at that point, I guess at 1:04 in the morning, Sunday morning, is when I first realized, hey, this might be a story worth telling.
So, all that going on. And Virginia Tech, which is 45-8 this year after their run through the Blacksburg Regional. But yeah, they had to win, as you mentioned, three elimination games after losing the winner's bracket final on Saturday to Kentucky. They had to play their way back into a rematch with Kentucky and then had to beat Kentucky twice. So a tough road for this number two ranked Hokies team. What was it like being there for that? I mean, I know Saturday, the first game between the two, Kentucky and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech had a lead late, then gave up a couple of home runs, lost 5-4. What was your sense from being there? And you're in the crowd, you're not in the press box, so you have a different vantage point. I think you have a better vantage point as far as this goes. What was your sense there among the, you know, the fellow Hokie fans? This felt like it should have been a coronation. They're number two in the country. All thoughts are about Oklahoma in a couple weeks, if they can get to the College World Series and playing that great Oklahoma Sooners team. But all of a sudden your attention has to be, oh my gosh, we just hope we get there. What was it like being a part of that?
Chris, if I can, I'm just going to back up just one day and start this story from Friday, because you're in a situation when it's the same format as the big dance. They rank the teams 1 through 64. So Virginia Tech opened against little old St. Francis of Pennsylvania. And so if you do the snake of the 1 through 64, St. Francis is the equivalent of the 62 seed. So it looked like Virginia Tech was going to have a good go of it. Keely Richard is the best pitcher in the ACC. Some people believe she's the best pitcher in the country, or at least in the conversation. down the last, the Boston College series at the end of the season, a home game against Liberty, and the ACC tournament, all three of those teams were able to hit her when she had been basically unhittable the entire year, if not her entire career down there. So they open up calmly enough on Friday at 2 o'clock. She's pitching against St. Francis, and she had a perfect game, Chris, until the top of the seventh. She still finished with her no-hitter, and it was actually her ninth no-hitter in her time at Virginia Tech. But only four of the Red Flash players were able to put their bat on the ball. It was a situation to where it was kind of like in Little League when you have the one dominant pitcher and the other team can't even put the ball in play. So that's how they opened. And the one thing about St. Francis, as small of a school as it is and as much as they struggled, they only gave up two runs to the Hokies. It wasn't until two unearned runs in the sixth made the fourth final. So that's how it got started. And then they had to sit and watch the next game, which was Kentucky and Miami of Ohio. Kentucky just went ballistic in that game. They hit everything all over the park, if not out of the park. Mercy ruled Miami of Ohio 15-1. So that's just setting the stage as going into Saturday. Now, anybody that's ever been to Virginia Tech at the Tech softball park, it's a pretty small park. But what they do is they add two sets of bleachers for the postseason. You have an extra set of bleachers on the left field side, and then you have some behind the left field wall. So the Kentucky game was set up as the first sellout. There was no tickets available to it. People were stacked on top of each other. It's a great atmosphere. You got the Virginia Tech pitching. The reason Virginia Tech made it to number two, now they did slip to number three after they lost in the ACC tournament. But the reason they were up there, Chris, they're one of the few teams that has a combination of dominant pitchers and timely hitters. So now your stage is set. You've got the largest crowd in the history of the park. People are literally sitting on top of each other. Everything's done except the national anthem. And we're all anxious and ready to go. And they evacuate the stadium. That's the first time. Everything about Friday was very normal. So no rain's falling, no lightning, no thunder, but they choose to evacuate the stadium based off of the radar. So the entire full house has to leave. They don't get to come back in for 2 hours. And I kudos to the fans there, because I knew Lynn and I were going to stay there regardless, but how many of the fans went out to the parking lot, sat out there for a couple of hours, not knowing when they were going to get back in, and then come back in? So you're in a situation to where Virginia Tech was dominating that game. It felt like it was going to be just another version of the St. Francis game, where it's like, are they even going to score a run? And that's when it got really interesting all at once, in that he actually, the coach down there actually brought back Keeley in the seventh, because the starter had gotten into a little bit of trouble, but brought Keeley back to close it out. Everybody in the stadium's literally on their feet, ready for it to happen. And then in one pitch, the unthinkable, Abernathy hits a 3-run homer. All of a sudden, for 2 days, you have been unhittable. You've been able to do what you need to do offensively. And in one pitch, they went from up 4-2, down 5-4. They couldn't answer in the bottom of the seventh. So now you're sitting here, you just lost. You just lost. Now you're in the loser's bracket. And the one thing about softball, college softball, the average fan doesn't pay a lot of attention to it, other than, wow, Oklahoma sure is good. That's what the average fan knows. A lot of people were skeptical about Virginia Tech being number two. They were skeptical about them being the third seed overall in the tournament. And here they were on the cusp of getting sent home. So now you've got another problem that doesn't show up in the box score, if you will. The NCAA will not let a game start after 10:59 p.m. So you just got beat. Now you just got beat. And I think in the most gut-wrenching way, you can lose a game that you dominated start to finish, one bad pitch and it's over. So now you don't even know if you're going to make it back out there or not. And because I was there, I got to watch and see what the Virginia Tech players were doing, who was trying to rest to take a nap, who was watching the next game. Now you're sitting here and you don't know if you're going to get to go back out on the diamond.
But you got to stay. You got to stay behind because you can't go back and relax because you got to stay game ready just in case.
Yes, actually stayed in their uniforms because they were going to be they were going to be wearing the same uniform. So it was kind of cool to see that some of them were in the bleachers, some of them were they had some cots set up and were resting. But yeah, it wasn't like you could go back to your dorm rooms and just kind of shake it off and say we'll get them tomorrow. So what they needed next was they needed St. Francis and Miami to play a really fast ball game. And the exact same situation was happening in Durham at the same time. Georgia and Liberty were trying to figure out if they were going to get to play the third game. But first, Georgia had to beat Liberty, you know, so before the clock ran out. So we're sitting here. And I, of course, me being me by this point, I'm monitoring the half innings, how long the half innings are taken, because it's actually a race to see if Virginia Tech's going to get to play. And at this point, I'm questioning. I look over to Lynn. I said, I got to wonder how many of these fans are going to come back. Now, think about it. These fans started tailgating, Chris, at 1 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
They didn't know. They didn't know if there was going to be a game 3. They didn't know if their team was going to be in game 3. Nobody saw Virginia Tech having to come out of the loser's bracket. So thankfully to everybody that was there, St. Francis, while they played, they pitched well and they defended well, they couldn't hit Miami of Ohio either. And you're sitting there. And so the final score ended up being identical to how Virginia Tech beat St. Francis 4-0. Most importantly in the equation is there was 19 minutes to spare. It was a pitch by pitch countdown as to whether they were going to get sent home. The NCAA also had decided that no team would ever play 3 games in one day. So if that's why that's important, if they had not played on Saturday, they had been pushed to Sunday, then they would have, this whole thing would have spilled over into Monday as well. So the game ends, Miami of Ohio wins the game 4-0. So now Virginia Tech they've been waiting around for 2 hours after having their hearts kind of torn out. Now they're in the batting cages in the practice area. They're trying to now get back game ready. So again, the amount of drama in it, it was the kind of story that if it was a bigger sport per se, the coverage of it would have been crazy. So they didn't get the next game started till 10:40. And again, I'm looking at Lynn and I'm going, you know what? I don't know if they can win 3 straight or not, but for their sake and the sake of the league, I really hope they don't lose this one. I said, I don't think there's going to be any. Kentucky's a good program. They were the equivalent of the 30th seed. Losing to Kentucky on your home field would sting a little, but it wouldn't sting as much as getting beat by Miami of Ohio and not even making it to the final day. So sure enough, a few innings in, they're down 4-1. It's the same 4-1 score that Virginia Tech had Kentucky down. And you're sitting there going, okay, well, Kentucky had somebody hit a 3-run home run. Instead, Virginia Tech actually did their damage with back-to-back, if you will, with one batter in between, 2-run homers. So now you got a 5-4 lead. Now you just gotta hang on. And you're sitting there at this point, I have to admit, as a storyteller, I'm going, I hope this game passes 1 a.m. because it's just a better story. It's a better story if it passes 1 a.m. And of course you're wanting the Hokies to win. So it with a 5-4, every pitch was an ooh and ah pitch. And I will sit here and proudly say, wow, the Hokie faithful. They were there till the end. They were there till the end. I'm not going to say that a couple of the younger ones might have had one too many beers, but the place was still full. At 1 a.m, it was still a traffic jam leaving the parking lot. So you're sitting there, and again, at this point, I felt like, well, hey, at least it's not going to end for them. It's not going to end in a bad way. Their program is just kind of on the upswing just recently. They had been to the College World Series, Chris, back in 2008, but up until last year, it was the first time they'd even made it back into a super regional. So there's not a lot of history. They don't have the same level of history that some of the other teams do. So there was a lot of skepticism, but they got to fight another day. And I'm guessing by the time they got back to their dorms, it was 2 or 2:30, and first pitch was at noon the next day. And so that was just all of that took place in basically just a little over 24 hours. And it was just one of 16 of the regionals. So while it was getting some coverage, it wasn't getting a ton of coverage. But they came back out in the opener in what would now be game 6, the first game on Sunday. It was a situation to where they came out, they fell behind early, and then the bats kind of woke up. And the key thing with Virginia Tech, and even as you look through the story, Virginia Tech, while it has 2 dominant pitchers, it has 8 hitters that's capable of hitting one over the fence. So it wasn't like there was one player that picked up the team and carried them across the finish line. The various home runs, and I got a kick out of anybody who, if they did read the story, the Earl Weaver reference, going back to the Baltimore Orioles, Earl Weaver was always the guy that was always saying, we're going to win off of pitching and 3-run homers. I can't remember a single time in the 3 days where Virginia Tech even thought about playing small ball. A lot of times teams will move runners over. There's a lot of bunts involved. Virginia Tech did not hide from the fact that at various times they have the ability of just hitting a ball over the fence. It kind of lined up in that first game on Sunday. It was the only game other than the Miami-Kentucky game that was lopsided. It was still 6-2. You're still feeling a little queasy. In the top of the 7th, Virginia Tech put it out of range with another 3-run home run. So that gets you up to the point where, hey, now who has the advantage? Now we're going to play a game. It's going to be winner take all. And then what happens next? This time it wasn't a radar screen that scared somebody. There was a storm brewing. And I made a joke to some people as we're getting escorted out of the stadium for the second time. And I said, this time it's not going to be, is it going to rain? It's going to be, how hard is it going to rain? And how long is it going to rain? Once again, a packed house goes out to the parking lot. It wasn't like everybody just went and saw a movie and came back. You don't know when you're going to play again. Then word starts spreading a little bit of saying, hey, we're going to try to start at 2:30. So kudos again to the grounds crew, because there was pairs of animals all over the place. The sky just opened. Once again, the fan base stayed there. And the next game coming in, Kentucky, trying to show that they're not scared. Chris, their first 2 batters in the deciding game went yard. It's 2-0 before there's an out recorded. And then Virginia Tech, fortunately, matches it. And one of the things, and we can talk about this at a little in depth, because one of the things that's been a sore spot for Virginia Tech all season is the illegal pitch. You're in a situation to where, for someone listening to the podcast, what the pitcher is required to do is to drag to drag the second foot. The second foot can never come off the ground. And so if the second foot ever leaves the ground, the umpire has the ability to call an illegal pitch. And the freshman pitcher for Virginia Tech, and you might be able to bail me out faster than I can actually come up with her name.
Emma Limley?
I'm sorry?
Emma Limley?
Yes, yes. She has been the victim of a number of those calls. Anything that's considered to provide a pitcher an unfair advantage, it's the umpire's job to call it. So it was a sore spot all season. It was a sore spot all weekend. And then it finally led to the coach being asked to leave the property, if you will, in that he was arguing one of the calls. Because at that point, the loudest cheers you heard anybody have was when one of the illegal pitches was called. What happens there is it's a ball call. Whatever happened, if it was an out, it's just turned into a ball. So you're in a situation to where coach had finally had enough, and he was in a situation to where he starts an argument and he's shown the door. So now you're sitting here, you've been through this over 2+ days. You're trying to win a game. You're trying to stay alive. You're trying to quiet everybody who said maybe you were overrated. And now you're going to try to win the ball game without your coach. So they're down 3-2. They're down again. And then there's the next Earl Weaver moment. They hit a 3-run homer. And they have, at that point, they have a 5-3 lead. Now it's the same situation against the same team. You're 6 outs away from what you need. And that's all they knew. They need 6 outs. And it was kind of cool when the catch was made in right field. I immediately joked with Lynn. I said, that's on SportsCenter tonight. There's no way that's not a top 10 play on SportsCenter. So in the sixth inning, Ritter, the right fielder, goes back. And on the first glimpse, it looks like she might have stole a home run. On SportsCenter, on top plays, when they slow it down, her glove, Chris, was on the other side of the wall. It wasn't a question, did she steal a home run? She stole a home run. So they get they go to the seventh, Kentucky rallies, they get the fourth run, and Virginia Tech finally gets the final out. So you had 7 games in 2.5 days, 3 of them had a 5-4 final. And Virginia Tech had won 3 ball games in less than 24 hours, starting at 10:40 p.m., finishing roughly 7 p.m. So while the NCAA is trying to protect you by not having you play 3 games in a calendar day, I'm not sure that what Virginia Tech did wasn't harder. And so now you're sitting there, and at this point, I'm just going, wow. All of the pieces of the story that took place were just kind of insane. And I was smiling because by the time we got back home to the mountain, that's when I said, hey, I think I'm going to write this up. I think I'm going to try to capture everything that happened here. You had rallies. You had a no-hitter. You had 3-run homer after 3-run homer. You had 3 scores that went down to the last out. You had a coach getting ejected. So I'm sitting there saying, I think I'm going to take a shot at this. And I was handwriting it first. It was 9.5 pages. And then I'm going, you have to, what do you cut out? What do you cut out? So as you're sitting here, it was the first time they had ever hosted. And now what they're going to get to do, they're going to get to try to regroup a little bit. And now they're going to get to host their first ever Super Regional. It's the third one that they have participated in, but it'll be the first one that will be played in Blacksburg. Now I did want to mention one more thing to you, only because I think this is a kind of a tough one. As you mentioned, Lynn and I were down there as fans. We weren't down there as reporters. We weren't down there in the press box. We had to go through the same process everybody else did to acquire tickets. So now they tell you, today being Tuesday, that Monday at 2 o'clock, anybody who hasn't donated money to Virginia Tech has a chance to buy tickets. So set the alarm on the phone, because you certainly want to go back down there. It's Florida, Virginia Tech. You certainly want to go back down there. Set the alarm for 2 o'clock on the phone. You get in line. You're put in a queue. You're put in a queue. The demand for the tickets, because remember, a sellout crowd, Chris, is only 1,100. Now the NCAA passed a lot more tickets to Florida, and there's more tickets made available through the NCAA. So I'm in the queue, and I get, after 18 minutes, I'm going, yeah, I'm not getting tickets. There was only 500 for sale. So I said, I sure hope I don't see somebody selling them online later for $150, because they're $10 tickets. So of course, what do you think I found this morning? People trying to sell them for $176. Shame on that person. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm going to disagree with you there. That's what the market will bear. That's what people should pay for. There's a scarcity of tickets. I'm an economics guy. That's not a shame one. If people want to pay for, if people really want to go and you really want to pay, that's capitalism at its best.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you clarified you're an economics person in that, because I'm just a sports fan. And I'm sitting there in the process going, I'm glad they did it the way that they did. Even though I didn't end up with tickets, I'm glad they did it where they protected their donating alumni. I'm glad they took care of their boost. They were able to do that. But it's going to be interesting, because now Florida is in a situation to where they're going to come in there. Obviously, the 3 seed plays the 14 seed. Florida is obviously from our favorite conference, the SEC. And they're in a situation to where, now that you know that Virginia Tech had to go through so many hills and valleys to get there, you can take a step back and look at the ACC as a whole. The ACC, Chris, made some history this year. It was the first time in the league history that 4 teams were hosting. And 2 of them are just amazing stories. Duke's only been playing softball for 5 years now. Well, technically 4 because of COVID. And Clemson's only been playing a couple. So here you were, there were people out there questioning, is the ACC really that good? Did 4 teams, were they worthy of hosting? How is it going to play out? Clemson, not only did they sweep theirs in the minimum of 3 games, they did it, Chris, without allowing a run. Their big matchup was against Auburn, and they beat Auburn 1-0. So Clemson actually swept theirs. Duke had the opportunity to sweep. Georgia pushed them to a winner-take-all game, and they won. Virginia Tech had to do the unthinkable, which was win 3 straight. So right when it looked like the ACC was going to go 4-for-4, the absolutely unthinkable happened. Number 2 Florida State got beat at home in 2 straight games. They're the team in the league with the most history. They were the team that made it to the finals last year of the College World Series and had Oklahoma on the ropes. So they ended up falling. So the ACC does advance 3 teams to the, I guess you would want to call it the Sweet 16, but the reality is it's the Super Regionals.
Couple of odd things about softball from a numbers standpoint. You mentioned 1,100 seats, 1,100 tickets anyway. I'm not sure if they're all seats even. When I look at TV ratings for softball, the softball regionals this past weekend did great. I say great. There were no college baseball games among the top 15 in the other category for sports this past week, rated by Nielsen. Whereas the Virginia Tech Kentucky game on Sunday at 12, the second game didn't get rated in the top 15 either, because I guess the later start. The 12 o'clock game, though, had 357,000 viewers. There were, let's see, one game on the schedule this past weekend, and actually was Sunday at 4:30, Arizona-Missouri, 550,000 viewers. So College baseball games would ESPN would love it if college baseball games drew that many viewers. They don't. And yet the stadiums aren't nearly as big for the softball. That's why you're being asked to pay $176 online. If you know UVA's baseball stadium holds just under 6,000, and when I say just under, I mean like 5,992 or something like that, very close. If there were even a couple thousand seats, if 3,000 seats there for Virginia Tech softball fans, I think you'd have close to. It sounds like you may have close to a sellout, and you'd be paying $10 a piece. So,
well, let me give you some enlightenment on what you just said. The reason you didn't see the rating for the second Virginia Tech Kentucky game. Chris, it wasn't televised.
Okay.
Other words, the super regionals now, they're going to make sure that every game being played is available in some form.
I would think it was probably on ESPN3.
Yes, you could have watched it on Plus. Now, we made it back down there to Old Mill in time to watch the end of the – what they call – their coverage is called the seventh inning.
Yeah.
And they actually, I ended up watching that for 4 hours. They're doing split screen stuff. They're taking you and the coverage was top shelf, but yeah, the only way you could have watched the Kentucky Virginia Tech game too was on ESPN Plus. So now you're in a situation to where, as you're going through this, The sport itself, Chris, it doesn't have a wide following, but I would say that the fan base, the nation's fan base, is as passionate about it as anything that's out there. And it's from a standpoint of this is one of the things to where, as you and I have talked back and forth in the past about what works for the ACC. Let's just pretend that you have a child, or maybe not a child, maybe you have a niece, okay, who's playing softball. Your the travel ball now, Chris, starts at 7 year old. You're crisscrossing the country on travel ball teams. So let's say that you're fortunate enough that your child or your niece can play in the ACC. That they're good enough to go to an ACC team. I'm not surprised that Duke went from not having a program 5 years ago to making a super regional because the kid gets a chance, the student gets a chance to go to Duke. The fact that Clemson did it in 2 years, you're recruiting people to a place where there's no field. There's no field. You're trying to get people to buy into something. So let's say your child or niece is good enough to play. Now you've paid for the travel ball. You've paid for the travel ball for all these years. You've done all of this. Now you're going to get to do what? You're going to get to watch them play college ball. I'm just thinking, again, let's say your child's playing for NC State. Okay. You want to follow them. You want to watch every game that you can. It's really hard to jump in the car in the middle of the week and go to Syracuse. It's really hard to jump in the car on the weekend and go to Boston College. These are the games where when you're, again, it's not the conversation we probably started out in that direction, but it's worth noting that if those games are played against schools like Appalachian State, like Liberty University, like Charlotte, to where the games are more regional, I think that the attendance, the fans are there. The people, the problem is like the NCAA, okay? This past tournament, we spent the first two rounds in Greenville because Greenville was what? It was big enough to hold the first two rounds. So here's the problem. Now, for the next two rounds, we were in San Francisco. Why? Because you needed a bigger building. In softball, there is no bigger building. You're in a situation to where you don't have the opportunity to say, okay, hey, we're not going to play here anymore. We're gonna play here, unless you're going to go way old school and put up temporary fences type of scenario. So that's where the soft. Now, if you make it to Oklahoma City, and I'm pulling for all three of the ACC teams to do that. Obviously, Virginia Tech has the best shot. Now, if you go out there, you're playing in a legitimate stadium that holds 12,000 and the place is packed for each game, you have an opportunity to to have the packed house atmosphere, if you will. But again, Virginia Tech's in a tough spot in that they're, when you build a softball stadium at the college level, my understanding is Virginia just upgraded theirs. When you build a park to play softball, and it's worth noting that Wake Forest and Miami, Chris, are the two schools that still do not play softball. You're in a situation to where they it was Duke and Clemson did make the move. Wake and Miami still do not. You're in a situation like Virginia. I'm not sure. And kudos to the I think it was the men's tennis team that hung number 31.
That's right. Yeah, on right. Sunday. Yeah.
Kudos to. Here's something that Virginia did, Chris. For the first time, they went to the ACC. We're not allowed to call it the ACC tournament. I didn't know that till this year, where it has to be called it's called something else because only the basketball is called the ACC tournament. But they qualified in the sixth spot, which is a phenomenal year for UVA. Okay, for UVA to finish sixth was a phenomenal year. And they got eliminated late by Florida State in the opening game. But it was the first time they had scored in the event. That was something that you're sitting here going, wow, they ended up scoring two or three runs at the end after Florida State had kind of opened the game up. So here you have for years, you and I have talked about the SEC was chasing us in basketball. They were chasing us in basketball, and they eventually, as much as it pains me to say it, if they haven't caught us, they're next to us. The ACC was kind of late to the equation when it comes to softball. But now, again, not only did Clemson decide to have a team, boy, they have a nice park. Duke not only has a team, they have a nice park. The facility at Virginia Tech is one to where, like, I was there the last regular season game, they were playing Liberty, and there was probably, I'm going to say 300 or 400 people there. So the parks are built for that. And that's pretty much across the country. This year I went to 10 stadiums that I had never been to before, parks. I can't really call them stadiums, 10 parks that I had been to that I hadn't been to before, just to try to see. And the next question that you have, because whether you're going to call it an Olympic sport or whatever term you want to put on there, use University of Georgia, for example. It's an SEC school. They do not charge admission for their games. Saw a game this year at the University of Notre Dame. Not only does Notre Dame not charge for parking or admission, they have a ton of volunteers treating you like you're royalty there. So now we saw a game at South Alabama. Doug and I saw a game at South Alabama. While they didn't charge you to park, they charged you $7 to get in the game. So the other thing that you're running into is there is no set thing. There is Central Florida is the only team in the Supers that is not from a Power Five, and that's going to even if in a change in a year or two when they join the Big 12. That's where your similarities lie, Chris, with the women's basketball. In the women's basketball, for years, if you look at the tournament, how much chalk there is, how much chalk, how the gap between the top 10 women's basketball team and the rest of the country has been gigantic. Now it's, you know, they're starting to close the gap a little bit, but there's still X number of schools that run it. So using Virginia for an example, you have to ask yourself, and they made great strides this year. I'm sure for most people, they weren't even a blip on the radar, but they made great strides. They finished sixth in the league. They went to I forget what we have to call the event. I'm going to call it the ACC tournament. I guess I'm not on anybody's payroll. They went up there. They competed with Florida State. So as a UVA alum, my question to you would be, what would UVA have to do to make softball relevant at UVA, or is that even a thing?
They spent a lot of money on a softball park. They're working to make it relevant. They spent a lot of money on that new great facility there in front of Davenport Field. So that's the sign that they're trying to do that already. It's a program. The UVA sports program has 31 national titles. They take if UVA plays something, they want to win at it. So I don't think it's that they don't take it seriously. They just the 2 or 3 year head coach just hasn't gotten the job done yet. That's something that UVA people who follow UVA sports across the board have had questions about. So I don't think that there's a lack of seriousness on the part of Carla Williams, the athletics director, or anyone else there. It's just a lack of getting the job done. That's all I would say about that.
Yeah, the raving about the facility and the improvement there is across the conference. It's a situation where everybody's taking notice to what they've accomplished there. And again, if you want to get into the nuts and bolts of it, you're looking at it and you're going, like Miami, for example. I'm going, look at the talent of softball players in Miami. I said, I wish somebody could tell me why they're not playing softball at the University of Miami. Who did they just hire? They just hired the AD from where? From Clemson. What's the last thing the Clemson AD did while he was at Clemson? He added softball. He saw something where, again, they did it from the ground up. It's one of those things where the ACC is making great strides. But again, as you look at it, they're chasing the SEC. And now the SEC, once Oklahoma and Texas make the move over, it's a situation to where I know it's going to affect football. I know it's going to affect basketball. But wow, is it going to affect softball? Oklahoma right now, I'll give you an example. They won their regional, which, of course, they're the number one team in the country. They actually lost last week, and it was headline news. They lost a game. They're like 58-2. So they played Texas A&M in the winner's bracket game. They didn't have their ace pitcher going. They had their number two pitcher going. They won the game 4-3. I go, holy cow, what were those fans dealing with having to care about how a game is? So if you notice the score on Sunday, okay, it was 20-0.
Yeah, yeah.
Oklahoma scored you made them mad. You poked the bear, if you will. You know, it's one of those things coming into this weekend. I know we're getting close to the 1 hour mark. You're in a situation to where Virginia Tech has a rare opportunity. The good news is the schedule's already posted. If you weren't one of the fortunate ones to get a ticket, I believe it's ESPN at noon on Friday. I think it's ESPN 2 at noon on Friday, and I believe it's ESPN on Saturday, and then they'll make the decisions on the TBA games on Sunday. But
it makes it a lot easier when there's only two teams involved as well. You don't have the late starts and everything else, so that makes it a lot more manageable. The weather doesn't look good. I will say that the weather in Virginia in general, but specifically down in Southwest Virginia, doesn't look very good for the weekend. So they may be still dodging some raindrops.
Well, it's going to be a fun experience. I have to applaud the fan base for sticking it out in the masses that they did, because again, I've been evacuated from a ballpark before. In fact, I was evacuated from Virginia Tech the last night of the regular season against Liberty, but to do it twice on back-to-back days for a couple of hours, and you just see people just sitting across the street in their cars and you're sitting there, and it would be kind of fun to see. The numbers are there. They do a nice job with the packaging of it. The seventh inning part, they did it. At one point they were showing you three games at one time. It's the sport is, I can say with a straight face, it's my favorite collegiate sport. Even more so than men's basketball and football, because the game is played quicker. The game is played in a smaller dimension. Things happen boom, boom. And as our dear friend Rob Sisk says, the cool thing about baseball and softball, when you go to the park, you never know who's going to do it that night. The night against Liberty, the last game of the regular season, Liberty had a young lady that had hit one home run all year. She's battling the best pitcher in the country, arguably the best pitcher in the country, had one homer all year. She hits a grand slam and a three-run homer. He has 7 RBIs, 2 home runs against Keeley. And you're just sitting there going, okay, I'm pretty sure nobody saw that coming. So, but you're correct. They're going to be able to televise it better because you know when the start times are. You're not starting a game at 10:40 p.m. And it'll be interesting. Duke and Clemson will both be on the road, and Duke's playing one of the schools that is one of the traditional powers. They're going out to UCLA. I think Clemson is actually help me out here. Clemson is a Oklahoma State. So that's going to be a tough challenge. That's a 7-10 matchup. It's not to say that it can't happen. And then of course Virginia Tech once again will go into the weekend as a considerable favorite. And these young ladies are never going to have Nike shoe contracts. They're never going to be millionaires. I hope that the fans will appreciate their efforts for the year, whether they get it done this weekend or not. I'm hoping they get to go to Oklahoma City, but what the coach down there has accomplished in just four seasons, I tip my hat. But again, I really tip my hat to the fans waiting out that process on back-to-back days like that.
Well, we're definitely rooting for a better weather weekend for the fans heading down to Blacksburg this weekend. And we'll do our best to have coverage. Jerry, I want to thank you for your time, your coverage of this. And we'll hope to be able, we'll definitely be bringing you back on. We have some more stuff to talk about, but maybe talk some more softball as well. But thank you for everything.
Hi, you're very welcome. It's always an enjoyable conversation, Chris.
All right. And thanks to our listeners out there as well. Everyone have a great day.